Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. We're going to do something a little different. The show features the recording of a panel discussion with former UW Parkside Chancellor Alan Guskin. Dr. Guskin joined the university in 1975 and served for 10 years. He was back on campus in May for the dedication of the Alan E. Guskin Center for Community and Business Engagement. The panel included former Associate Vice Chancellor Esther Letvin and current Assistant Chancellor for Development and Alumni Relations, Tom Krimmel, who was a 1972 grad of UW Parkside. Chancellor Guskin is credited with building the foundation for UW Parkside as an institution very much connected to the communities it serves. He shares some of the challenges and rewards of leading a university during a time when what the university envisioned it might become was changing rather quickly. Early in the recording, Chancellor Guskin introduces Jim Cruiser, who today serves as county executive for Kenosha County. And as a student at UW Parkside, Jim Cruiser was student government president during the time when Dr. Guskin was chancellor. From Thursday, May 2nd, a portion of the panel discussion featuring former Chancellor Al Guskin.
It's been a few years since I was here, and then I actually left in, I think it was August 1985, which I think is 34 years ago, right, about. And so it's when I got the email saying that this event was going to happen, I was sort of overwhelmed. Then when I was told I had 5 minutes, I said, now, I'm a former chancellor, and I'm 82 years old. 5 minutes? Not possible. But anyway, I figured nobody's going to stop me. So. At any rate, what I'd like to do is, probably most of you will stand, but all the people that were on the faculty or staff or even somebody like Cruiser, who's a student, would you please stand? I served when I was here. My God, we're still around. Well, I was only 4 years old when I came. So anyway, the chancellors get a lot of credit and a lot of pain for things they do, but mostly too much credit. And there are a lot of people who are responsible for what happens. There are a number of senior administrators here today, and I'd like them to just stand, and just because anything I say that I did, they were doing. And many of them actually did more than I did. So Michael Bassis, who's was Associate Dean of Faculty, and Ben Greenbaum, who was Associate Dean of Faculty. Esther Letvin, who was my assistant for a number of years, and Tom Krimmel. What'd you do, Tom? No, Tom Krimmel, who was, convinced to become the first Director of Alumni Affairs. When I came to University of Wisconsin Parkside in 1975, it really was the most prominent thing I remember was the shock to the community of the merger of the UW-WSU merger in 1972-3. And it was still a major issue for the campus. You had a large number of young faculty who had come thinking this was going to be a 20,000 student doctoral campus. You had a lot of faculty who were in the centers, the Kenosha Racine Center, who also thought that this was going to be a big university. And all of a sudden, based upon a lot of politics probably and a lot of fighting that was going on between the University of Wisconsin, which included Madison, Milwaukee, Parkside, and Green Bay, and the Wisconsin State Universities, which were only the nine former state teachers' colleges, became state colleges, became state universities. And they all were fighting with each other. And so the legislature and the governor set a pox on all your houses. You're joining together into one system. We, in fact, we refer to it as Chapter 36 and Chapter 37 forever. And it's 36 was the Madison campuses and 37 were the State University campuses. And so the campus was actually, in reflecting on it, I think I'm right, but was a bit stunned by the aftershock of what happened. And I think that I was chosen, and I was 38 years old at the time, and I had been an acting president for a year at provost at a private university, Clark University in Worcester, Mass. I think I was chosen because of my youth and energy, and they figured they needed somebody to redo the university's mission. And so the whole notion for me was, how do we figure this out? And how do we make lemonade, if you will, from lemons? How do you take the virtues of this new entity, so different than what people expected, and make it important, viable, and distinctive? And so the original notion that we had was to really think back to the roots of the university. The university really was created, we have a now county executive here, but the county board bought 700 acres and gave it to the state for the purpose of building the university. The people of Kenosha and Racine, although they fought about it all the time, this was going to be their campus. The politicians of the area were devoted to this area. And so looking back in the roots, it was a community-based university, really. It really, although the University of Wisconsin was thought about it as another University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in terms of size and aspiration and so on, that was not in the cards at all. So reaching back to the roots really said we were going to become a community-based university in some way, though that those terms were coined a little later, and that it was going to partnership and integrate with the community in some way, and serve what amounted to large numbers of first-generation students with a high-quality education to really lift up the community. At one point, I remember a figure that 70% of all the high school graduates that went on to college in Kenosha went to Parkside, which is an astounding number when you think about it. I figure right now, 60% or so are from Racine, Kenosha right now here. So that the challenge was, how do you create a university? Now, this is 1975-6, in which community-engaged universities was not really thought about very much. The university in those days was thought about having a wall around it, and to be separate from the community, or the university would serve the community with services, and the community would become a client to the university. But the whole notion of the university and the community coming together in some way to bring the community out to the university was something that was, I think, fairly new at that point. And so in effect, we had to make a virtue out of what amounted to a very, for many people, a fairly depressing thought, and to do it as an undergraduate university. You now have 10, 13, something like that, graduate programs, but we didn't have graduate programs here until what? That helped me out, I think, the 80s. Yeah, we finally got a master's degree in business, but we couldn't call it because an MBA, because Whitewater would not like that. So we got a master's degree in administrative science at that point. Then we got an MPSA rather than MPA. So it was a struggle, but the clear message was we were going to be an undergraduate university with a high quality faculty offering high quality education and caring about our students. That's what really, in effect, what we were all about. And I believe that the future of the university was going to be based on that if we were going to be successful. And the question is, how do we do that? how do you integrate communities and the university? How do you try to reach out to community members to come to the university when they're not taking courses, when there's no quote reason? And so there were a whole bunch of what we call, people call low-hanging fruit, if you will. Well, what do people really care about? And so I had a number of people who became assistants to me who had dreams. One of them was Rita Talbot. I think it's building named after her. She became my assistant for cultural activities. And one of the things that, I don't know whose idea it was, but it was a brilliant idea. Probably wasn't mine. But to develop cultural weekends. And some of you may remember we had cultural weekends, Armenians, Scandinavians, Italian, Germans. I'm sure I missed some. And there were faculty members or staff members who were who really had a passion for that. But Rita was the one that did that. And it was, I remember 5,000 people would come out on a weekend on this beautiful campus to hear lectures. It's the first time I heard a lecture on the Armenian crisis in the early 1900s. And to eat food, to hear music, drink wine probably, and to just enjoy the fact that these were our cultures and the culture of the community. And so we did that, and that was a key part. Another important, and that went on for a few years, and they were huge activities. Another activity was much smaller but very important. It was called CHAMP, and it was to serve the African American students in the primarily Racine area. And Larry Logan, who's not here, but Larry, that was his dream. His dream was to, he had graduated from college. His father was a gardener at Southern Illinois University. And he was helped by people at Southern Illinois to get his bachelor's degree. And his dream was to do that for other kids like himself. And so he worked with middle school students and high school students, brought them to campus, brought people to talk to them on campus, and had summer, worked with them in the summer. And he was tough. He demanded that those students think about college. And if they wore hats, he'd yell at them. If they didn't behave properly, he'd yell at them. And it sort of, it was a very important first step to encourage these students to think about college. I don't know how many percentages went to college. The Parkside Library was always a gorgeous facility and linked up to the community through the public library system. And became a teaching library, so that working with faculty to teach students who are first generation, who maybe never walked very often into a library, to teach them how to use a library. You know, when I went to college, you just walked in the library and you prayed that you knew what you were going to do. Nobody did know what. We literally, the teaching library taught people through working with faculty to learn how to really use the library efficiently and effectively. And that was a very powerful force. And Carlos Stoffel and Joe Boise were the key people in that. There was a music series, what was it called again? Accent on Enrichment. And Rita was, I think, a key to that, as well as others. We brought performers, famous performers, into that beautiful hall, and which seated, 400? 500 people, a very intimate kind of concert hall, and community people would come out in hordes. It was mainly for the community, as were the weekends, cultural weekends. And then a little later in 1983, with the Kerner Commission Report, The Nation at Risk, this lady, she'll talk more about, had the brilliant idea of bringing together the superintendents, the board chairs, and the teaching union heads of all the districts in Kenosha and Racine County, called it the, if I remember, the Educators Consortium originally. And every month, that whole group met We gave them brownies. That was a big enticement. But they, every month they met and they talked with each other. One of the most fascinating things about that is it was the only place that union heads, school board chairs, and superintendents could talk. They would go off on the side and discuss things that they could not discuss otherwise. There was one of the things we developed, and Ben Greenbaum and others, Ben, I think you probably used it, but the basic skills program. In math and writing, a lot of the students that came to Parkside really did not have the skills to work at college level. Well, one of the things you could do is throw them into classes for a year, 2 years, and what would happen is they'd get discouraged. The other thing is to run a skills competency-based program, which was very important and became an article in the New York Times, and it became well-known throughout the country, and a lot of people, a lot of universities contacted us. There was we developed, and Michael was the one that taught me a lot about this, a real focus on student learning that would not only, faculty developing curriculum, how do you focus on student learning through assessment? I used to bang you over the head all the time about assessment, student learning, which later became a big thing in higher education. But this was very early, the competency-based program, and then later on, the integration of all of student services. Carla Stoffel also had a role to do that with that. One of the most interesting things, which I think people may not remember, because I think it ended, was we developed a family practice residency with the Medical College of Wisconsin. The Talent Hall had empty space. So the whole first floor Talent Hall became a medical facility. We don't have medicine on this campus. But Sarinda Dada, I think, and others somehow were able to convince the Medical College of Wisconsin to put a family practice residency on this campus. So people from the community came out here to a medical clinic. And then we developed also UWM nursing program. I think it was a doctoral program. Was housed in Talent Hall as well. And so you had this undergraduate institution with, at that point, very few master's degree programs, offering a postgraduate medical facility and a doctoral program and for nursing, which was an incredible, brought a lot of people to the campus. So the whole theme of these low-hanging fruits was quality education for first-generation students, many of them over the age of 25, and bringing the community to campus, doing whatever we could to bring the community campus. So it was their university. They created it. They bought the land. They really paid the bills. And then there was the political communication. Walt Shire is no longer with us, did an incredible job of keeping us connected to the politicians in the community. And we had great, one of the nice things about Kenosha Racine for me was that many of the most powerful people in the legislature were from our area. George Molinari, of course, was was one of the key founders of the university, and he was chair of joint finance, I believe. But later on, we had another, I remember his first name, John.
Yeah.
And Joe Andrea, that's right. And then there was John, I forget his last name, was a senator, state senator. John Maurer. And they were had enormous impact, and Walt did them. A fantastic job. And there are many other things. I gained some notoriety, which is not positive, in the Kenosha community by saying that in the mid-80s, or 83, something like that, that maybe AMC should close because it would be good. Kenosha owned the waterfront, and here was a smelly paint plant that was preventing people from going downtown. Well, it turned out to be Jersey. Not because of me, though. And one of the things, and I'm almost finished, one of the things is that because of all the work we did, and a lot of them were individual programs that maybe those of us in the administration knitted together our heads in terms of trying to develop a community-based university and a high-quality program, was the two Dons of the University Wisconsin system, Don Percy and Don Smith, really supported us. They thought what we were doing was really critical. And Don Don Percy left, and Don Smith then became, in effect, the executive vice president. And they literally, I don't know how well known it is, but I knew it, they literally funded us considerably beyond our enrollment at a time of cutbacks in the UW system, primarily because of their commitment to the campus and what we were doing. Without that, I don't know if we would have really done very well. And they also, Don Smith particularly, was the one that overcame the opposition of the old WSUs, who were opposed to Parkside getting anything, basically, that would compete with them. And that's how we got our master's degree programs. I do remember walking into his office in the annual budget review and saying, Don, when are you going to give us graduate programs? And he looked at me and said, you give me gas, Guskin. He said, but he got away. He just said, he told his assistant, who was actually from the old Wisconsin State Universities, said, give them a master's degree in business, a little bit's way it happened, and give them a master's degree in public administration. Yeah, that was it. But the most powerful effect of all of this work was actually, and the culmination was the occurred in my last year, and when we got the authorization to build residence halls. Maybe Tom will talk more about that, but because he was critical to it. And basically, the university system was opposed to our having residence halls because we compete with the other campuses that had it. And we decided it was time. And so we did a feasibility study. We got the political stuff. Politics in order, and it was my last year, and I cashed in all the chips I had. And I had some good, decent relationships, but it was Tom Krimmel and Shirley Schmerling, who was director of a non-existent housing program, but she helped students find housing. She and her husband were very politically influential throughout the state. And what happened was we developed this elaborate plan, and we had the politics in order, and we went to the UW system administration, and everybody there knew we were going to be rejected. So we talked to the president, he doesn't like it, but he says, I'll present it to the board. But what he didn't know is that we were going around the state to all the members of the facilities committee of the Board of Regents, and we got them to approve unanimously to have residence halls. And the board then approved it. Then it went to the Housing Commission, and the Housing Commission was opposed to it because of the politics. So they thought, and the governor was opposed to it. But we had built the political support, and by Tom and Shirley and I and Walt Shire were going around. And so what happened, it was very, very critical, and the county executive will appreciate this. The county board voted unanimously that we gave the land to UW Parkside for this university, and it was to have residence halls, and we vote unanimously to give it. And then Tom worked to create a Parkside Foundation, which then received the banks worked with the Parkside Foundation on the loans. So we used only private funds for the first 4 or 5 years, I think, only private funds to fund the residence halls, and forced through the politics the building commission to approve the residence halls. So these first residence halls were built without any state money. And
now, would you mind if I just added to that?
I'm sure you will.
You know, I wanted to give Al a break because he's almost done. Did you hear that?
I'm done.
Okay, you
told
me
the
story too.
Yeah. So what happened is the foundation was created in May of 85. Michael Welk was really one of the key drivers of that. And the state gave 18 acres of the campus to the foundation. That's what made this feasible, is that the foundation owned the land. And then the Kenosha County Housing Authority issued tax-exempt bonds to finance it. So the foundation had zero money. All of a sudden, they had $5.4 million for this project. They spent about $5 million on the project and had $400,000 as an operating reserve. and the housing. Now, the foundation was created in 85 in May. Groundbreaking was in December of 85. The housing opened in September of 86.
Wow.
17 months. And the key was Al's political connections, his community connections, and the ability to get this done and approved before he left. So I'm forever grateful. I just had to add that to you.
No, and I think it was, that would not have happened if we weren't integrated with the community. To get a unanimous vote out of the board of the county board, and to get people to buy in, local people to buy into a foundation, get the banks to give a AAA rating, because they use their AAA rating for the bonds so they could be sold. And all of that happened, I think, because of all the work that was done by this university, which now, 20 years later, I left in 85.
33 years.
33 and a half years, whatever, later, is now a community-based university and community-engaged university, all these years later, continuing on and winning the national awards for doing it. So, which is a lot of, I mean, it could have ended in 1985 if people weren't committed to it and weren't willing to put the work in. So, I mean, I'm looking at George Perdicaris because I'll stop in a second, but he was one of the people working with the engineering firms and to really bring the engineering firms together with the university, and taught me about a bumblebee factor that they could not talk to each other outside the university, but inside the university, they could share ideas.
That was an interesting look back at how the University of Wisconsin-Parkside created an identity that remains today, and that is a university closely tied to the communities in our area. You've just heard a panel discussion from May 2nd of this year featuring former Chancellor Al Guskin, Associate Vice Chancellor Esther Letvin, and current Assistant Chancellor for Development and Alumni Relations, Tom Krimmel. To hear the full panel discussion, including some perspectives from members of the audience, visit uwp.edu/ParksideToday. And Parkside Today is all one word. I'm John Melke. Thanks for listening, everyone.